Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On June 19, 2008, the Supreme Court decided two ADEA cases, Kentucky Retirement Systems v. EEOC and Mecham v. Knowles Atomic Power Laboratory. In Kentucky Retirement Systems, the court was asked to consider whether the use of age as a potential factor in the distribution of retirement benefits to disabled workers establishes a prima facie case of discrimination in violation of the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, the ADEA. The court concluded it does not. In Mecham v. Knowles Atomic Power Laboratory, the court was asked to consider whether, under the ADEA, the employer or the employee bears the burden of persuasion as to whether an adverse employment decision challenged as age discrimination was based upon a reasonable factor other than age. The court held that an employer defending a disparate impact claim under the ADEA bears both the burden of production and the burden of persuasion for the reasonable factors other than age. RFOA, affirmative defense, under 623F1. Alan Smith, an associate at Grijon, Tavis, Badock, and Stoner, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Smith.
On June 19th, the Supreme Court handed down the final two Age Discrimination and Employment Act decisions of this term, Kentucky Retirement Systems v. EEOC, and Meacham v. Knowles Atomic Power Laboratory. In KRS v. EEOC, the court split 5-4 in upholding Kentucky's retirement plan. Although the plan uses age as a factor in calculating retirement benefits, it is not facially discriminatory in violation of the ADEA. The Kentucky plan provides two types of retirement benefits, normal retirement benefits and disability retirement benefits. Workers in hazardous positions, such as police, sheriffs, and firefighters, are eligible for normal retirement benefits after 20 years of service or at age 55 if they have worked for at least 5 years. Workers who become disabled after they are eligible for normal retirement still receive normal benefits, but employees who become disabled and are not yet eligible for normal retirement have years added to their actual service. Disabled employees receive the number of years remaining until they would be eligible for normal retirement, i.e. until they reach 55 or work 20 years, whichever is fewer, but not more than the number of years they have already worked. As a result, disability benefits may be greater than normal benefits for similarly situated employees. Justice Breyer wrote the majority opinion and was joined by Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Stevens, Justice Souter, and Justice Thomas. Justice Kennedy wrote the dissent. The court based its decision largely on Hayes and Paper v. Biggins, which held that a dismissal based on pension status was not because of age, because pension status and age are analytically distinct. Hazen, however, left the door open to special cases where pension status served as a proxy for age, and age, not pension status, actually motivated the employer's decision. According to the majority, this case is a variation on the special case that Hazen left open. Based on Hazen and a number of factors and circumstances, the majority concluded that the plan was not facially discriminatory because the differences in treatment were not actually motivated by age. First, age and pension status are still analytically distinct, even when pension status is based on age. Second, the plan's background illustrated that pension status was not simply a proxy for age. The plan involved complex system-wide rules for pensions, which the ADEA treats more flexibly and leniently, and the disability benefits were available to all hazardous position employees on the same terms. Third, there is a non-age-related reason for the disparity. The plan is simply intended to treat disabled workers as if they had become disabled after, not before, they became eligible for normal retirement benefits. Fourth, the plan can be advantageous to older workers, confirming that age discrimination is not the reason for the disparity. Fifth, the plan does not rely on age-related stereotypes about the work capacity of older workers versus younger workers. Sixth, the plan itself and the difficulty in creating a plan that both corrects the disparity and achieves its legitimate purpose indicate that age did not actually motivate the plan. The majority limited its holding to the special case where differential treatment is based on pension status. Its decision does not affect the rule that a facially discriminatory policy or statute is sufficient by itself to show disparate treatment under the ADEA. The majority adopted a clear rule for these cases. When a pension plan includes age as a factor, and employees are treated differently based on pension status, a plaintiff must show that the differential treatment was actually motivated by age, not pension status. The factors and circumstances discussed by the majority provide a guide for how plaintiffs might meet this burden. According to the dissent, the Kentucky plan was a straightforward act of age discrimination. The majority ignored the ADEA's text and the court's own precedent, and its decision contradicts the EEOC and most of the courts of appeals. The dissent criticized the majority for not readily providing a clear rule of law amongst its list of policy arguments. The decision creates unevenness in administration, unpredictability in litigation, and uncertainty regarding formally well-settled employee rights. Hazen clearly holds that when an employee policy is facially discriminatory, no additional proof of motive is needed. This is the long-standing rule in ADEA cases because any decisions related to a facially discriminatory plan are obviously actually motivated by age. The employee must prevail unless an employer can show that one of the affirmative defenses or exemptions applies. In this case, Kentucky has not done so. The majority misconstrued Hazen as creating a virtual safe harbor for policies discriminating on the basis of pension, even when pension status is tied directly to age. This case is the opposite of Hazen, because here pension status and age are not analytically distinct. Instead, they essentially merge into one category. If the ADEA allows employers to tie disability benefits to an age-based pension status designation, they can use that designation to determine any employment benefit or condition. The majority cannot limit its holding based on the ADEA's text or precedent. Neither the ADEA nor Title VII precedent suggests that discrimination based on a protected trait is permissible if the trait is only one of many factors, especially when the protected trait is a controlling outcome determinative factor in calculating employee benefits. The Kentucky plan is also not necessarily benign. Here, the discriminatory classification impermissibly rests on a stereotype that violates the ADEA and the majority's analysis, i.e., that a younger worker has more productive years left and should have the extra years imputed to them. This is the very essence of age discrimination, and the ADEA prohibits employers from using the blunt tool of age when assessing an employee's future productivity. Whether this is always good public policy is for Congress, not the court, to decide. Moving on to Meacham versus Knowles, the court by a 7-1 vote held that in disparate impact cases under the ADEA, employers bear both the burden of production and the burden of persuasion on the reasonable factors other than age affirmative defense. The ADEA prohibits an employer from limiting, segregating, or classifying their employees in any way that adversely affects the employee's status because of the employee's age. It is not unlawful, however, if the employer's otherwise prohibited differentiation is based on reasonable factors other than age. Justice Souter wrote the majority opinion and was joined by all of the justices except for Justice Breyer, Justice Scalia, and Justice Thomas. The majority began by emphasizing that the RFOA defense is an affirmative defense and should be enforced like similar affirmative defenses in other anti-discrimination statutes. Neither Ward's Cove nor Smith v. City of Jackson dictate otherwise. Smith did not broadly incorporate the Ward's Cove decision. Doing so would lead to strange and untoward consequences. Smith only referenced Ward's Cove regarding disparate impact liability existing under the ADEA and the employee's burden of identifying the specific employment practices allegedly causing the disparate impact. The majority noted that the latter is not a trivial burden. The employer already bears the burden of production, and the gap between production and persuasion will likely only be an issue where reasonableness is obscure. The more reasonable the factor other than age is, the shorter the step will be from production to persuasion. The court acknowledged that its decision will make it harder and costlier for employers to defend against ADEA and disparate impact suits. And some employers may change the way that they do business, but those concerns are for Congress to consider. The RFOA represents Congress's balancing of protecting older workers and providing employers with sufficient flexibility. Justice Scalia wrote an opinion concurring in the judgment. He would defer to the EEOC's position that the RFOA is an affirmative defense, which employers bear the burden of proving, and the RFOA replaces the business necessity test in the ADEA disparate impact cases. Justice Thomas wrote an opinion concurring in part and dissenting in part. He agreed that the RFOA was an affirmative defense, but he adhered to Justice O'Connor's concurring opinion in Smith v. City of Jackson, which he joined, that the ADEA does not provide for disparate impact claims. Justice Breyer did not take part in this case. Meacham has already been applauded as an encouraging sign that the Roberts Court may be evolving from its reflexively pro-business reputation and becoming more even-handed in its approach to employment cases. Perhaps the most interesting aspect of Meacham is what the court did not decide. The court did not grant cert on the second question, whether granting supervisors broad discretionary authority during a reduction in force constituted a RFOA. Ultimately, this question may have a greater impact on ADEA cases, but it will have to wait for another day. That's it for this time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.